TED Audio Collective.
Hi, I'm Debbie Millman. Canva is great for designing visual content for work, no matter what industry or department you work in. Nail your next presentation with Canva Presentations. Start with a professionally designed template and use it as a springboard for your design. It's a serious time saver. Time to present but can't be there in person? Enter Canva Talking Presentations. Record yourself presenting and add your talking head to your slides so your audience can watch your perfected presentation anywhere, anytime. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This is Design Matters with Debbie Millman from DesignObserver.com. On this program, Debbie Millman talks with Andrew Gibbs about the importance of package design, about his package design blog, The Die Line, and about what he sees as the positive role that brands play in people's lives.
People are brands themselves, and the brands that they associate themselves with and wear and buy and bring into their homes are a part of them.
Here's Debbie Millman.
Anyone can start a design blog, but few are as good at it as Andrew Gibbs. Gibbs is just 26, and he's built a blog empire. It started out as a way to stay current in the package design industry. Gibbs was fresh from art school, and he'd roam the aisles of stores taking snapshots of wonderful packages. Then he'd go home and write about it. But in the process, Gibbs was making a statement. Packaging is art. It struck a chord. Those pictures of wrappers and boxes now draw almost 3 million viewers a month. And this year, Andrew Gibbs rolled out a book, an acclaimed design contest, and a conference. Andrew Gibbs, welcome to Design Matters.
Thank you.
I noticed that you just put up your hand and indicated four. So does that mean you've gone from 3 million a month to 4 million a month?
We're edging closer to four.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Incredible. I can't even believe it.
So is it true that initially when you were first starting the blog, you'd go into Target and just take pictures and post them?
Absolutely. I would go in with my camera and be kicked out by security sometimes. But when I started the site, that's all I could get.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning. What made you decide to do a blog in the first place?
My background is as a designer. I went to school for design. I got my bachelor's degree in graphic design. I mean, even when I was a kid, I was just obsessed with brands and boxes. And
okay, Andrew, I work in a firm where there are literally nearly 100 people that love packaging,
right,
but yet none of them have started
right
a package design blog. So what made you decide to do this public blog?
Because nobody else did. There was nothing like it. And I needed a resource where I could see what's going on in the industry and what's going on in the world of package design.
So where were you working as a package designer?
I worked for this company called Schoenfelds. They're not in business anymore. They were a great, great first company to work for. I started as a production artist, and I was literally designing die lines day in and out.
Oh.
And that's where the name came from.
And so while you were there, you decided at that point that you needed a resource.
Right.
And so you just...
I just said, I'm going to start a package design blog today.
What was the first post you did?
The very first post. Louise Feely.
Really?
Yes,
of
very,
course.
Very first.
Of
this,
course.
The second. The very first post was actually an introduction letter saying, welcome to the Die Line and here's what I want to do.
So you put up a post by Louise Feely, of mm-hmm. course, the great, great designer.
Incredible.
Extraordinaire. What was the package?
Andrew is looking at his associate, Ivan Navarro, who is who is in the studio with us. And Ivan is a part of the Dialine Empire. And we're going to talk to him in a few moments about what he's heading up now. But he keeps looking at Ivan for all of the details. So I have a feeling that Ivan is really the sort of wind beneath your wings.
Absolutely.
I'm like the human vault. I store all information.
Okay, yes. So I'm going to look at you now, Ivan. What was the post?
I think the post was a retrospective of all her work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nicely done.
All her signage and type.
So you started the blog in 2007 mm-hmm. with an introductory letter and a retrospective post about Louise Feeling.
Right.
You then ended up 4 years later with nearly 4 million views a month. Mm-hmm. What was the catalyst to that type of success?
I think people just wanted a community. And I think when we started the site, it gave package designers a home.
So it was just this barren territory you came in.
It kind of was.
Now, to be fair, there are a number of other package design blogs now as well.
Right.
There always are after something is very successful, the copycats and the Me Toos and the people that want their own point of view out there. But none are as successful. And I don't think it's because you were the first ones out
right.
there. So what do you think? What do you attribute some of your success? Can you? Have you figured it out?
I haven't yet.
Have you bottled it?
No. And it's still...
No pun intended.
It's still to this day, I'm amazed by it. I really have no idea. I think people just needed a home for package design. I think people really gravitated to it. I think we have a strong point of view with a lot of the packaging we post on the site. And we don't post everything. That's the difference. We're very, very curated.
What would you say your point of view is?
My point of view is to promote beautiful, well-designed packaging, regardless of if it's from a student or a major design firm or from anyone.
How many pieces do you post every day?
On a daily basis, we post between 6 to 8 projects.
How many do you have to go through?
A lot. For 6 to 8 posts, we'd probably have to go through 20 to 30 to 40
wow.
projects. We are very, very curated. We get a lot of projects that are sent in that we don't post. But we get a lot of submissions, a lot.
And are they from PR people? Are they from directly from the source of the studios?
From PR people, the actual studios, from the individual designers who work at the studios.
Students.
Anyone.
I mean, I get emails now from people who just say, I hope you like it, I'm a student. And I get really formal, well-constructed emails from design firms.
So what is the criteria? Is it just simply work that you find inspiring and beautiful?
That's it.
Do you ever argue about what should or shouldn't be up on the site?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so tell us about that.
Yes, yes.
Do you come to fisticuffs? Do you have packaging flying all over your office?
Well, all of us have a really distinct point of view. We sometimes would love something that the other just totally hates. For instance, like I personally love the fashion packaging, and sometimes Andrew will be like, oh, that's not the best, or this doesn't look great, or I'm not sure about this, I don't like that, and then I'll have to kind of, you know, pitch it.
Okay. So the firm that you were working at after you graduated, the where you were a production artist, was that the only job you've had?
Oh, no, no.
Prior to the Dialine? Talk about that.
Well,
let's talk about your trajectory.
I worked, that was my first job as a production artist when I started. Quickly, within a year or two, I was in charge of the entire division.
And how old were you at this point? Because you graduated when you were 19.
Yeah, I graduated high school when I was 16, and then I graduated college when I was 19. So I was turning 20 pretty
already
much.
Already with a bachelor's degree, already on your own and working.
Right, right.
Wow. So you're like one of those like crazy smart young people that I loathe now.
apparently. Everyone asks like, why, you know, I never particularly set out to, you know, graduate early and this and that. It just kind of happened, and it just was right at that moment. And
I think you give the timing in your life far more credit than you should, Andrew Gibbs. I think there is something to be said for the achievement that you've
right.
had, not just being
of course
timing.
No, of course. I mean, I've absolutely. I've always known what I wanted to do.
Always.
I've always been very, very passionate about design. I always knew. I remember being in fifth grade on Photoshop 4. And that's when I knew. I was like, I'm going to be a designer. I didn't even know what a designer was then. I was in fourth grade.
And so why packaging, though? What made you what you said that you've always loved packaging since a very early age, and I can completely relate. Right. I think we have that in common.
Absolutely.
This obsession with boxes and packages since our since we were wee little ones. But and what was it about packaging that you found so compelling?
It's packaging is so embedded in our culture. It's really what kind of runs this country in a way. Everything is a package. Every single thing around us, everything we consume, everything we buy on a daily basis, it's a package. And somebody designed that, and so much work went into that. And what's so interesting about packaging in relation to design and other things, packaging is literally the direct connection between the consumer and the brand. They can physically pick it up in their hand and take it into their home. And that's what I find really, really powerful about packaging. It's not something that's just living on a wall. It's something you kind of bring into your lives.
So do you remember the first package that ever caught your interest?
Oh, goodness. I would have to say it was my Lego boxes.
Really?
I remember I was just going to Toys R Us, and I just was obsessed with Legos, and I always loved the packaging, and it was just incredible.
And then as you were growing up, what were some of the other brands that really spoke to you?
Hot Wheels.
So toys, a lot of toys.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was obsessed with Hot Wheels, great packaging.
Great logo. Mm-hmm. Really gorgeous logo.
Absolutely. And from there, it was everything. I've been inspired by everything.
So you then left your production artist job, and then where did you go next?
I was working for a company called Pacific World Corporation. It was designing packaging for artificial nails.
And did you get that job, Andrew? I never actually asked you that before.
I'll tell you, with the last company I worked for, I basically had to leave. We got to the point where we weren't getting paychecks anymore, and we had real estate people coming through our office, showing people around the space, and I knew I had to just get out of there. So I had a friend and a coworker who worked there and recommended it, and it was a fantastic place to work.
And so was it after that you then left to do the Dye Line full time?
Well, after that, I was there for about 2.5-3 months, and then I kind of found my dream job. I was hired by this company called Power Brands. They're the biggest beverage development company in the country. And I was the creative director. So I was designing beverage brands day in and day out. And to this day, I still work for projects for them. I absolutely loved what I did.
At the same time, then you're furiously posting all day long, whenever you could take a break, 6 to 8 posts a day of fabulous, beautiful, inspiring packaging.
Right.
And so you're doing two things at the same time. You must have, especially if you had come from a place where you weren't getting paid and you watched those sort of real estate people coming in and out of the office, there must have been some fear about how you were going to pay the bills if you were to leave and do the Dye Line full time.
Of course.
Had you started taking advertising on the Dye Line at that point?
When I was at that company, I was already writing the book. I already had a successful lineup of advertisers. We had all of our spots filled. So we were the company was doing very well, but I never started the Dye Line ever to make a dollar or anything. It was always my passion, and it just worked out so well.
Now, was there ever a giant jump in your readership? Is there anything that you can pinpoint as saying that was when it really caught fire?
It's been very gradual. Our growth has been very gradual year over year. There's not I've looked at the statistics from when we started the blog, and it's been just a gradual trajectory up.
Tell us about how you made the decision to leave your full-time job that must have given you health insurance and all sorts of benefits and a paid vacation and
Absolutely.
Sick days and everything else. So you then have to make a decision. Okay, here's this thing that I love that seems to be catching on.
Something's working.
Something's working, but there's no guarantee
Absolutely.
That it'll keep working. So how did you make the decision? How did you take that big jump?
I had to make the decision because I was going crazy. I was working full time. I was writing a book on the side. I was doing the blog full time. And I had to make a decision. And it was actually my boss at my company who was the one who kind of pushed me. He said, just quit. Just quit.
Just do it.
Just do it. And so I said, okay. And I quit.
Had you saved any money? Had you sort of had any rainy nest eggy kind of thing?
No. It was never a plan. We never had a long-term plan for the company. I never thought it would be what it is today. So nothing. I mean, we just did
it.
Just did it.
Do you ever look at all of this and say, how did this happen?
Every day. It's incredible.
Do you ever worry about the site's continued success? Do you ever worry about staying relevant, about being fresh?
Absolutely. I mean, how could I not? I mean, I worry about it every day. But it's that constant innovation that we're able to do. We're a very small team, so we're able to do a lot of things, and we're able to be very nimble. So as we see technology changing and the industry changing, we're able to pretty quickly adapt.
So the first extension of the Dyeline brand was actually your book.
Right.
The book Box, Bottle, Bag. It was released by How Books in early 2010. And like the blog itself, very quickly became the number one selling and highest rated package design book on Amazon. So how did the book deal happen? Did you go to How? Did How come to you?
Basically, the book happened because I was at Barnes & Noble one day, and the blog was already doing really well. And I was looking at all the package design books for inspiration for stuff to post on the site. And I was like, gosh, there's not really very many really well done package design books. A lot of the projects in the book I wouldn't even post on the site, and a lot of the books that were out at the time, and you know this was a few years ago, and that's really where the inspiration came from. And I had emailed How just kind of out of the blue and said I want to do a book.
So you just got the courage up, found out who the publisher was or
right.
who the acquisitions editor was,
right.
sent them an email and said
she replied
Hi.
Back. It was Megan Patrick from How, who is absolutely
Megan
incredible.
Patrick, yep.
She said, I love the Dyeline. I read it every day. Let's do it.
And so then you did it.
And then we did it.
And so talk about the process of writing this book. I mean, here you were. The only experience you had was
right.
writing the blog.
Right, right.
So how did you make that transition from online to on paper?
Right. I mean, the book kind of was and is my personal favorites and the best of the best from the website. And a lot of new things that were not on the website. And really, it kind of followed the same format. I think what people really like about our site is it's very visual. It's you're reading a package design book because you want to see the packaging.
Eye candy, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly what we did. We made it beautiful, big images, and we kept a lot of the content down. We kept it minimal. We included quotes from the designers and let them speak about it themselves, and included whatever they wanted to say about it.
So what was the experience like in comparison to publishing a blog?
It's a lot harder.
In what way?
Actually, putting together the book itself wasn't as challenging as I thought it would be. It was those release forms for copyright for every single image in the book.
It's an administrative nightmare. I don't think people realize how much administration goes into actually writing a book.
I had no idea. At the time when I was writing the book, I was running the site and I was working full time, and I was like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? But it was a great, great experience. And when we're working on our second book.
So talk about that, because that's a big scoop we've got here on the radio, don't we?
So we are working on a second book with How again. It is tentatively titled The Design Genome.
Nice.
What the concept of the book is about the creative brief. You see in a creative brief all these terms, authentic and luxury and
premium
and designers see these terms every day in creative briefs that they get. And it's the idea of the book is to really determine and define what those are. So we're breaking it down not only visually as, you know, what kind of aspects make premium, for instance. So we're going to look at actual examples of packaging that looks premium and kind of break it down and see, you know, some of these elements can make your package look premium, but also tying it in culturally. So we're showing culturally what that means.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Ivan, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions now. In addition to the blog, in addition to the book, the Dyeline also now is running a design competition, the Dyeline Awards, and that is going into its third year, and a design conference in conjunction with How and F&W Media that is going into its second. So tough question, toughest question of the afternoon. Why does the world need another conference or another design competition?
That is a tough question. We're different because we know our audience and we genuinely love people. I'm a people person. So at the conferences, I ask people, what is it that's on your mind, you know? And I think a lot of conferences are usually kind of the big players, the established people, the big companies, the cool kids. And a lot of people who are starting out or students want to be a part of that. And
so you're advocates for the small startups?
I'm not advocates for the small startups or anybody. I think we're advocates for people that genuinely have a passion for this industry and who genuinely want to do it better versus just who's in and who makes the most money or that kind of thing.
So I want to talk a little bit about why you believe brands are so important to people. Obviously, Andrew, you were impacted by your Lego boxes and your Hot Wheels when you were little. I know that the Goody Berets that I coveted were actually drove me to thievery. Let's talk about why brands mean so much to people. Why do you think that they do?
I think you identify yourself with what you own. I mean, there's a reason why people buy Mercedes-Benz. People that buy a Mercedes-Benz want people to know they're driving a Mercedes-Benz. They want to feel that they've made it, that they can afford to buy it. Whereas someone else might want a Ford Bronco, let's just say, you know. Not everybody wants a Ford Bronco, but for the people that want a Ford Bronco, that's their thing.
Do you think that there's anything inherently wrong with that, with using these things to telegraph who we are or our financial status or
no.
where we...
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I mean, I think brands are a part of people. They really are. You grow up with brands. You put your trust into brands. You bring them into your life. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You know, those are your calling cards, what your taste is like.
The way I see it is that people are brands themselves, and that the brands that they associate themselves with and wear and buy and bring into their homes are a part of them.
Extensions of themselves, yeah.
So how would you describe the Dieline brand?
The Dieline brand is young. It's fun. It's
smart.
Smart. It's innovative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is approachable.
So tell me what you think are some of the most important, interesting, beautiful, meaningful packages that are happening in our culture today.
I think for me, one of my most favorite brands in the world is Coca-Cola. So
you love the Turner Duckworth people, don't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I think what they've done with Coca-Cola is fantastic.
What do you think is most incredible about it?
Because what they've done is really define the brand and bring it down to its core. And they took off the fluff. They took off the fake dew on the can and the fluff. They were able to see what the brand is at its core.
How would you describe that core?
It's an emotion. I think the Coca-Cola brand is an emotion. I think people...
It's happy.
It's happy.
It's happy.
People are happy. When you drink a Coke, it just makes you happy.
Coca-Cola is relevant to every phase of your life. You know, I think you can think of when you were a child and the taste of opening a cold Coca-Cola at a picnic or on a road trip or at the movies. It's just part of your life. It's huge.
Let's have a few more. And
I love Levi's.
Okay.
Levi's to me are just iconic. I mean, I that's all I wear.
And what do you think about the new identity with the word Levi's coming out of the shape of the holding device?
I think it's amazing.
I think that
if they can, you know, that it's so iconic and it translates so well without having all the extra stuff, I think that's when you've made it that, when you get to that point, you're already there. And I've noticed Target's doing it too. They just have the bullseye. And everyone knows it.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how Levi's does without the letter forms mm-hmm. in the holding device.
I don't think they need it.
I don't think they need it either, but I miss them a little bit. But then again, for somebody that's as involved in packaging and branding as I am, I have a very low tolerance for change. But that's just in general. I like everything to remain exactly as it is forever.
Of course.
Well, that's also part of the brand, is keeping the tradition and your legacy.
Right.
Alive, so.
And I think that's what Turner Duckworth, who did the design as well, like Coca-Cola, they've brought it back to its simplest form, which is fascinating. They brought it back to its roots.
I was recently talking to Moira Cullen, who actually hired Turner Duckworth to do the redesign a couple of years ago at Coca-Cola. And she was talking about the struggle in getting the Coca-Cola packaging approved by senior management, who were very worried that if they took the bubbles off of the can that people would think that the Coke was warm.
Wow.
And isn't that amazing?
That's incredible.
And somehow she was able to persuade them to do that. And it gives me a lot of faith that people didn't reject it because
right.
they thought that mm-hmm. the Coke was then warm as opposed mm-hmm. to cold because the bubbles and the sweat of the cold can were gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's so interesting what they have done, because it's Coca-Cola is such a huge corporation. So I can only imagine what they had to go through to get to where they're at now.
It's a fascinating story.
It's incredible. But I think it's, if one of the biggest brands in the world can do that, everyone can.
But why is it so difficult to find beautiful packaging in the average supermarket or the average drugstore in this country? It's not for lack of good firms.
Right.
It's certainly not for lack of good brands. But yet...
Well, I think in the past, package design, especially in stores, mass consumer products, they kind of just have to scream at you. And I... Mm-hmm.
Do they?
In the past. Well, in the past. I think that's changing now. But I think that's why a lot of packages in mass market stores aren't designed.
I think the you know, especially major brands, they just made things based off, oh, red makes people hungry or whatever. And then they would send it out and then...
Wonder what the Tylenol people think of that.
So it's like, well, Tylenol, it's that's, you know, red's emergency. It's like, oh, you know, I'll cure you.
Right.
And that's kind of, I think they went with that approach and then sent it to the ad agencies and said, this is our demographic. We want these people to buy it. So I think there was a disconnect.
And I think consumers have shifted really in the past few years, especially with the recession we've gone through. People are screaming for more... simplicity. They can see through the fluff. They can see through that now. And you see that in a lot of products that are coming out now. They are much simpler. I look at for the list, Help Remedies.
It's kind wonderful. It's
a great example of how a brand can just change an entire category. And I think what they've done with the packaging and just simplifying it and making it clean and accessible and easy and friendly, I think that's what consumers want.
So do you have a lot of optimism for packaging and branding in the future? Do you feel like it's just going to get better, or do you feel like we'll have a lot more struggles before
I think it's going to get better, absolutely. I think it's going to get a lot better. And I see products coming down the pipeline that are really changing things and changing industries. I look at Method and other products. There's Berry Plus in the laundry category. They're condensed, and I think people like that. And I don't think anybody should be shipping around gallons full of water. I think it's the biggest waste in the world. And I think that's what's going to be changing. And I see these brands coming out that are condensed. They've brought down an entire jug of laundry detergent to a little case that you just pop a little, throw it in there, and that's it. And I think that's where brands are going to be going in the future.
Well, Ivan, Andrew, thank you for being on Design Matters. Thank you for a true rallying cry in the packaging design industry. And thank you for making us all better at what we do.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Andrew Gibbs and Ivan Navarro and the whole wide world of packaging design at www.thedieline.com. I'd like to thank you for listening. And remember, we can talk about making a difference, we could make a difference, or we can do both. I'm Debbie Millman, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Design Matters with Debbie Millman is recorded at the Masters in Branding Studio at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. It is produced by Curtis Fox Productions with technical assistance by Rainey Ortica and research by Jen Simon. The show is published exclusively by DesignObserver.com. You can subscribe to this free podcast in the iTunes Store.